Hi, Mayor. How are you? Thanks for joining. Okay. Rebezra, you have the Marmaquemus?
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. Okay, good evening, everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful Yom Tov, a wonderful Pesach. It's nice to get back into the rhythm. Tonight's shiur, we're continuing the topics of Choshen Mishpat. Tonight's shiur is the interesting topic of Yerusha, Be'inyone Sorora, and Rabbanus. So that means that if someone holds a position of authority in a community, this is probably more relevant. We can imagine back in the old days in the Kehillah that you would have the Parnassim of the city, the people sitting on the city council, people that were sort of in charge of the city, people that had positions of authority, people that were in charge of various things, like you sometimes have today, like a guild. You have people that are in charge of the Chevra Kedisha, and they have really like an ownership on that mitzvah. They're in charge of that kehillah, that institution, that Chevra Kedisha. And there's and the place can discuss how this position, this is a schus, this position of authority, or this position of responsibility, I should say, is a schus that because you initiated, because you have that position and you've been serving in that position, so you have a schus that your son or your relatives could inherit that position from you. So we're going to discuss this, and we're going to loop around and see what's the scope of this, what does it apply to every kind of position, and would it apply also to the rabbinate? If someone has a rabbanus, would that go be Yerusha? Would his son have the first schus, the rights of first refusal to take that position? So let's start from the beginning, and we'll go through the classic sources and see how it applies today. So in Sefer Dvarim Yud Zayin, Perek Yud Zayin, Sefer Dvarim Pasuk Chaf, so the psukim are discussing a melech. So the pasuk says, the man yarech yomim al mamlachtoi. So the pasuk says, in order that the king should live long on his throne, in his monarchy, hu ubanav bekerev Yisrael, him and his sons, bekerev Yisrael, among them, within the midst of Klal Yisrael, within the middle of Klal Yisrael. So the pasuk describes the king, he should live long and well, and he should sit on his throne, him and his sons, bekerev Yisrael, among the Jewish people. So the Gemara darshans a few things from this pasuk. Says the Gemara Krisus, we just had something similar recently in Shkolim, Masechet Shkolim. The Gemara says, Loimin ha-Gemara mizeh, the Gemara learns from here that the Malchus is hoylech b'Yerusha leben. The Gemara says that the monarchy is bequeathed to the son. The son inherits his father's throne. So the king, he's sitting on the throne, he's the king of the Jewish people. When the king passes away, so his son will inherit the throne. That's what the pasuk means when it says, "Hu ubanav bekerav Yisrael." And as long as the son is roy lekach, as long as the son is fitting, is a qualified candidate for the position, umemale makiv aviv, and he fills his father's place. He fills his father's shoes. He's qualified for the job, and beyira. So I mentioned the word yira, as long as he fears heaven, we'll soon see in the Gemara about that. That's the pasuk in Sefer Dvarim regarding a king. The Torah clearly tells us that the monarchy is something that is bequeathed down through the generations. There's such a thing as a royal family. Once we anoint the king, so his children inherit the monarchy, inherit the throne. It's very interesting on the side that Lahavdil, the Gemara tells us that a person should run and see even a non-Jewish king, a non-Jewish monarch, because from there you'll learn to see the difference between the honor that a non-Jewish king gets, and we can derive a kal vachomer from that, how much honor the Jewish people will receive in the world to come. So it's just a lot of the halachas that we have regarding the king. So it's very interesting how in the UK they have many of these concepts with the monarchy there. When I was living in Canada, there was an exhibit honoring Queen Elizabeth, Her Majesty the Queen. So being a Canadian citizen, a Canadian subject of Her Majesty the Queen, so we went to see that exhibit, and it says there that they actually anointed the queen with holy oil. I doubt that oil was actually the Shemen HaMishcha. Maybe it was Shemen HaParsimon that we had in Shkalim and Krisus. Maybe it was balsam oil. I don't know what kind of oil it was, but it's very interesting how the monarchy that exists today is like a dogma, is an example of the Jewish monarchy, and they follow that. They follow that. And we know that the Malchusa Derekia is like Malchusa Da'ara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he gives us Malchus in this world that we can learn from there how to have a feeling of reverence towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the Indian of monarchy is a Jewish concept, and it's something that should be preserved. That's the pasuk regarding a king. Now we have in Shmois Chavtes, in the parshas that we recently read, in Truma and Tetzaveh, Vayakal Pekudei, so it discusses, this week's parsha, it discusses the Miluyim, it discusses inaugurating the Kohen Gadol. So the pasuk says, Shivas Yamim Yol B'Shem HaKoyen Tachtav Mibonav Sheyovo Yal Oyel Moyed L'Shores Bakoyish. The pasuk says that for 7 days we inaugurate the Kohen Gadol by dressing him for 7 days. In the parshas that we've been reading, they dressed, Moshe Rabbeinu dressed Aaron in the Shmoyna Begadim, and that was the way we were machanech, how we inaugurated the Kohen Gadol. And the pasuk also says regarding the Kohen Gadol, Tachtav Mibonav. The Kohen Gadol, who is going to have the schus to enter the Kodesh Kedoshim on Yom Kippur, so he is the one mibonav, tachtov mibonav, that it's inherited by his son. If his son is worthy, the son inherits the position of his father, just like we see in the Torah that Elazar inherited the Kohuna Gedoila from his father Aaron. The pasuk says, the Gemara Darshins, in Yuma, the Gam Kahuna Gedoyla Yored Birusha Leben, that the son inherits the Kahuna Gedoyla as long as the son is worthy of that Biyira. That's what the Gemara says. Now, the Sifri expands this, not only the Malucha and the Kahuna Gedoyla, the Sifri expands this, Hu Ubanov, Darshins the Sifri, Hu ubanav, this is the pasuk regarding the melech, the king. Hu ubanav, she'imeis, if the king dies, b'no olme tachtav, his son stands up in his place. His son inherits his father's position. Einli elezeh bilvad, I only know the melucha. Minayin lekol parnasa Yisrael. How do we know that any position of authority, any position of responsibility, a parnes, probably is something that we remember from what we read about in the old days in the Kehillahs, like a Parnas Ha'ir, somebody in charge on the council, somebody who's in charge of the city. So if a man passes away, his son would inherit his position. And it's a schus that he has, that he deserves, that his children, if they're qualified, would be the first to inherit that position. So how do we know that if somebody has a position of authority, of responsibility, how do we know that his son inherits? Tamalimar bekerev Yisrael. The pasuk regarding the melech, it says, Hu ubanov bekerev Yisrael. So that means among Klal Yisrael, but it's extra words, bekerev Yisrael. That teaches us that any position, kol shehu bekerev Yisrael, any position among the Jewish people, beno ometachto, the son stands and takes the position of his father. That's the Sifri expanding the pasuk of the Melech to apply to all appointments. There's a fascinating Gemara in Maseches Ksubis on Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara tells us that when Rabbeinu Hakadosh, he was on his deathbed, so he says Lechachme Yisrael ani tzarech. So he convened, he called a quick meeting. He says, he's on his deathbed, I need to speak to the Chachme Yisrael. So it says, Nichnasu etzlei chachmei Yisrael. So the elders, the wise men of the Jewish people, they entered Rebbe's room. Omer lahem. So Rebbe gave them a few instructions, his last will and testament. He gave the Chachmei Yisrael a few instructions. So we'll read through the list of items that Rebbe told the Chachmei Yisrael, and then we'll focus on the ones that's relevant to this discussion. Al tispeduni ba'ayores. The first thing was, don't conduct the hesped for me in the various cities and villages. Only conduct major hespedim for me in the krach. It would be a bigger kavod haTorah if everybody comes to the same hesped instead of having clusters of hespedim in different places. It would be a bigger kavod haTorah that way. That was the first instruction that he gave the Chachmei Yisrael. Heshivu yeshiva lachar shloshim yom. After 30 days, when the mourning period is over, establish yeshiva in memory of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The next thing he said was a few cryptic statements. Number one, Shimon b'ni Chacham. So Rebbe says, my son Shimon is very wise. And then he goes on to say, Gamliel b'ni Nasi. Gamliel, my son, should inherit my position and become the next Nasi. He should become the next prince of the Jewish people. In those days, there were two powerful positions of authority among the Jewish people. There was the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbeinu HaKadosh was the Nasi, the famous. That's why we Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He was like the prince. He was the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. And the one who was in charge of the diaspora, he was the Reish Galusa. He was the one who was the head of the Gullus. It actually says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that the Reish Galusa in Bavel actually had more power than the Nasi, more autonomy, because the government in Gullus, in Bavel, they gave a certain autonomy to the Reish Galusa. He was appointed by the Malchus in Bavel. In Eretz Yisrael, the Nasi perhaps was recognized, but he did not share the same authority that the Reish Galusa had in Bavel. Both of them were heirs of David HaMelech, and it was sort of like preserving the Malchus-based David in a smaller extent. So it was like a king in exile. So the Reish Galusa was in charge of the diaspora, and the Nasi, the prince, was the equivalent, his colleague, his counterpart in Eretz Yisrael. Rebbe was on his deathbed, and Rebbe says, Shimon b'ni Chacham, Shimon my son is wise, Gamliel b'ni Nasi, Gamliel my son should inherit the Nasius, he should be the next Nasi. And then someone not related, Chanina bar Chama should be Yoshe Barosh, he should be the next Rosh Yeshiva. So apparently Rebbe had all of these positions. Rebbe's passing away, he's dividing the various positions among his sons and among his students. So the Gemara explained, "My ka'amar." What does Rebbe mean to say when he says, Shimon b'ni is chacham, Shimon is wise, but Gamliel should be the Nasi? Hachi ka'amar. This is what Rebbe meant to say. Af al pi sheshimon b'ni chacham, even though Shimon, my son, is the wiser of the sons, nevertheless, Gamliel b'ni Nasi. Nevertheless, my son Gamliel, who became the Rabban Gamliel, he should nevertheless become the Nasi. Although he's not as wise as Shimon, my other son, but Rabban Gamliel, he should, in spite of that, be the next Nasi, because he's older. So Omar Levi, so Levi says, Tzricha l'meimar. What's the Chiddush? Why does Rebbe have to teach us that? Hakraka Omar, the Pasuk says, Es ha-mamlocha nosan li-yohoyrim ki hu ha-bachar. That the kingdom went to the firstborn. So the Pasuk in Chumash tells us that the son inherits, and the Pasuk in Divrei HaYamim tells us further that it goes mamish like a derech Yerusha, the Bachar, the firstborn, he's the one who should inherit the Malucha. So why did Rebbe have to instruct us that we should give the Nasius over to Rabban Gamliel? He was the Bachar, he was the firstborn. So the Gemara answers, Ahum memala mokam avoysev hava. The Pasuk that says that the kingdom was given over to Yehoram, that's because he filled his father's place. He filled his father's shoes. Rabban Gamliel, Einu Memala Mokam Avoysev Hava. Rabban Gamliel was not as great as his father, Rebbe. And that's what Rebbe meant to say. That although Shimon, my son, is the wiser of the sons, he's the more of the Chacham of the sons. So perhaps you would think that he's more qualified to be the next Nasi over the Bechar, over the firstborn Rabban Gamliel. Nevertheless, says Rebbe, nevertheless, it's he should become the next Nasi. Now, says the Gemara of Rebbe, my time of Aven Hachi, why did Rebbe do that? If Reb Shimon is more qualified than Rabbi Gamliel. So why indeed did he give it over to Rabbi Gamliel? Why did he instruct us that the Nesias goes to Rabbi Gamliel? So says the Gemara, Nehi de'enu mamala makam avoysa b'chachma. It's true that he's not the wisest of the sons. If we would just be looking to chachma, so then Rabbi Shimon would be the wiser of the two. He would be more qualified. He's more qualified to be the Nasi. But since Rabbi Gamliel is also an eligible candidate, b'yiras chet memala makam avoysav hava, when it comes to fear of heaven, fear of sin, Rabbi Gamliel was a yorei chet, he was a yorei shemayim. So that itself is considered a qualification for the Messias. So although Shimon was the wiser, so perhaps we would take a step back and say, of the two sons, Shimon is more qualified to be the next Nasi than Rabbi Gamliel. But as long as Rabbi Gamliel has qualifications, as long as he's eligible, he's a yorei chet, so therefore he inherits the Malucha, he inherits the Nasius as the next Nasi, as the Bechor. So it's very interesting that we see from here that the Malchus, so to speak, the position of being the Paisik Hador, of being in charge of all the religious affairs, if you will, of Eretz Yisrael, that position is bequeathed down to the Bechor. Now, of course, the Bechor has to be eligible, has to be qualified. And although another one of the sons, even though it was a son of Rebbe, another one of the sons was perhaps more qualified, but since the Bechor, Rabbi Gamliel, is qualified, he's qualified to be the Nasi, he's not the greatest of the sons, but he is the Bechor, so nevertheless, at the end of the day, he inherits the Nasius from his father. What's the minimal requirement? That he's a Yorei Chet. He has to be qualified, he's a Yorei Chet, he's qualified for the position, although Reb Shimon is greater, it goes B'Yerusha to the Bechor. That's what the Gemara says. So we learn from here that the Malchus is given over B'Yerusha to the sons. The Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim tells us that it goes to the Bechor. And the Gemara in Ksubas tells us, even if the Bechor is not the most worthy of the sons, nevertheless, as long as he has Yiras Chet, he's qualified for the job, so he inherits the position even over another one of the sons, even if he's not the most worthy. For sure, he would inherit the position over somebody else who's not even a son. Now, all of this is brought in the Rambam. It's fascinating. The Rambam brings the Psukim, he brings the Sefri, he brings even alludes to the Gemara in Ksubas. The Rambam says, in Hilchas Malachim, Perek Aleph, Halacha Zayin, Zel Shoyne. So let's read the Rambam together. I wrote the Rambam's words out. Verbatim. Once they anoint the king, so from that point on, he has a schus in the malucha, him and his children, his descendants, forever. Shehamalchus Yerusha lahem, because Malchus is a Yerusha. Shenemar, as it says, l'man yarech yomim al mamlachtoi, that was the pasuk we brought before, that in order that the king should live long, him and his sons among the Jewish people. This is fascinating. Heniach ben katan, what if the king passes away and leaves a minor son? The son is a child. Mishamran loy hamalucha, we preserve the malucha. We don't disqualify the son. The son might be 6 years old, but we preserve the malucha. We hold on to the throne for the child. Ad sheyagdil, until the child grows up. So obviously we'll have somebody, a trusted appointee, who will oversee the throne, and I guess oversee the position of the governance until the child grows up. K'moy she'asa Yehoyada liYoyash, just like Yehoyada did for Yoyash. Yoyash inherited the Malucha when he was 6 years old. B'chol ha'koydim b'nachala koydim Yerushas ha'malucha. And the Rambam seems to say, this is a debate in the Paiskim, but the Rambam seems to say explicitly that the Malucha would be passed down the same way the Nachala is passed down, the same way inheritance is passed down. The Bechor has the first rights. We're obviously not going to divide up the property and give a double portion to the Bechor. The Bechor inherits. If there's no Bechor, it goes to the oldest son. If there's no son, it seems from the Rambam, it would go to the next of kin. It follows the way a Nachala would. There's a debate in the Achraim about that. The Rambam's pretty clear. V'haben ha'gavol koydim l'katan mimenu, and the son who's older inherits the malucha before a son who's younger. V'loy ha'malchus bovad, now the Rambam refers to the Sifri. Not only malucha, ela kol sraros, any position of authority, the chol minuyin, any appointment, Shebi Yisrael, Yerusha lebenoy uleben benoy ad oilam, it's a Yerusha, it's inherited, it's a schus, that it can be inherited down, the children have the right to inherit this position from their father. And I saw the Achrayim explain that it's not an object that's a mumminus, a bilus that goes with Yerusha. It's not the regular rules of Yerusha, but it's something similar to Yerusha. It's a schus that in honor, in out of respect for the person who held the position, so it's respectful to him. It's a schus for him that his son should be able to carry on whatever the father accomplished in his lifetime. That's what the Rambam says. He extends it over to other to other minuyin, other appointments as well. V'hu shiyah haben l'malam makam avaysaf, b'chachma u'b'yira, provided that the son fills the father's shoes in wisdom and in fear of heaven. And now the Rambam alludes to the Gemara in Ksuvos, the instructions of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Hayimamale b'yira, if he fills his father's shoes in yira, he fears heaven. Even if he's not as wise as his father, and even if there's another son who's wiser, like we saw in the Gemara in Ksuvos, mamidin hu b'makom aviv, we put him in the place of his father, and we teach him. It's a learning curve. We give him a chance to learn on the job. The son is a minor. We allow him to grow into the position. The son has yiras chet, but he doesn't quite have the wisdom. He doesn't have the experience or the wisdom right now to carry this position. That does not disqualify him because we appoint him and we work with him and he learns the position. Malam denosei. It's fascinating how the Rambam says we have to have the patience because it's a schus. As long as we see the potential that the son will eventually fill his father's place, he has the yira, he has what it takes to grow into the position, so we give him that time, that learning curve to grow into the position. That's what it says in Ksuvos, that's what the Rambam says. But kol mi she'ein bo yira shemayim, however, if the person does not have the fear of heaven, afo pisha chamachmasai meruba, even if he's wise, ein memananoi say laminoi min hamadriyin shavi Yisrael, so that is a disqualification, we do not appoint him. So someone brought up the point before, what about the kings, the wicked kings in Israel? So it's true, so we weren't in a position of authority, and Klal Yisrael was worshipping Avodah Zarah at that time also. We have many times in the Gemara where the Gemara says that the Chachamim didn't really approve of the person that was in the position of the who is serving as the king. So we weren't able to do anything about it. But if we're able to do something about it, the person has to be Mimala Mokam Avoisav, at least Beyira, like it says in the Gemara in Ksuvos. Now, there's a question, and there's sort of like an exception to the rule, which is really going to be one of the, it's really a monkey wrench in this whole thing, which is what the Poskim debate, how to deal with this exception, and what can we extrapolate from this exception. So I wrote here in Ayin Vav, Tzarchin, because the Gemara says in Yuma, Ayin Beis, Amid Beis, and Ayin Gimel, Amid Aleph, this is right after the Gemara that we brought in item Beis, that the Kuhuna Gedoyla is also bequeathed and inherited by the son, inheriting his father's position. The Gemara in Yuma tells us that the Koyen Meshuach Milchama, the Koyen who was anointed to serve as sort of like the chaplain in the army. Now he also has all the halachas of a Koyen Gadol. He would serve with the eight begadim. He has the Maila of a Kohen Gadol, he's subject to all the halachas of a Kohen Gadol. The Gemara tells us in Harius, and the Gemara tells us in Maseches Makis. So he has all the halachas of a Kohen Gadol. Nevertheless, it's not Yered B'Yerusha. The Gemara excludes the Kohen Meshuach Melchama. He's sort of like a Kohen Gadol. He's not the actual serving Kohen Gadol, but he has a status. It's a position of authority. He would go out with the soldiers, and he would decide who's fit to fight, who's not. He would be part of that ceremony announcing who's able to go back home and who should stay to fight. And he would give chizik to the soldiers in the army. And it was an appointed position. And he had the status of a Kohen Gadol. The Gemara tells us, Yachol yehei b'noi shel Meshuach Mochama Meshamish Tachta. You would think that the son of the Meshuach Mochama automatically inherits the position of his father, just like the son of a Kohen Gadol inherits the position of his father. So the Pasuk tells us, Shivas yamim yelbeshem ha-Kohen Tachta b'banav. The Pasuk says, Asher yavoy el oil moy, that only the Kohen whose main appointment is to enter the Kodesh Kedoshim on Yom Kippur, that means the Kohen Gadol who serves in the Beis HaMikdash, says the Gemara, Mishe Iker Mishi Chasei La'oyal Moed. The only Kohen Gadol who is enabled to inherit his position down to his children is only the Kohen Gadol whose Iker Mishicha, his anointment or appointment, his responsibility is to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Yotzazeh, this excludes the Koyen Meshuach Mochama, She'ikr Meshichasei L'Mochama, where although he wears eight begadim, and although if he would want to serve in the Beis Mitzvah, he would be required to wear the eight begadim, nevertheless, his Ikr Meshicha, the main tafkid of his job, is not to be the Koyen Gadol who serves on Yom Kippur. The tafkid of his job is to go out in the Mochama. So therefore, there's a special exception that he does not have the right, the schus, to inherit, to bequeath his position down to his son. His son can go for the position just like anybody else, but his son does not automatically have a kedima to get that position. So the shaila is tzarechi, and why is the Kohen Meshuach Mochama worse than any other minui? Now this question, let's leave it on the side for now, but this question is actually going to play an important role in the discussion of when do we say that Yerusha, that the position is inherited, and when do we not. Now, it would seem from this, in item Zion, it would seem from this that a Rav of a city, if we have a Rav in a city, since it's an appointment, and we're going to talk about what type of Rabbanus we're discussing here, a Rav in a city who is appointed to be the Rav over the city, so it would seem that it's an open and shut case, that it's Nitin L'Benoi B'Yerusha. It would seem that, just like the Gemara tells us, by a king, and the Sifri applies it to any minui among the Jewish people. The Rambam applies it to any minui. And we saw in the Gemara in Ksubis that the Nesius, Rebbe told us that he's going to pass the Nesius down to Rabbi Gamliel. And Levi said, isn't it based on the Pasuk of the king? And the Gemara explained, because you would have thought that he's not qualified because he's not the wisest of the sons. Nevertheless, he's a Yarechet, so he is qualified. So it would seem from all of this, an open and shut case, that a Rav, the son of the Rav, as long as he is qualified to a certain extent, he's a Yarei Chet, and we see the potential that he can be Mamala Makam Aviv, it would seem from here that he would inherit his father's position. The Ramah tells us this explicitly in Yoredeya, Reish Men He. In Hilchas Malamdin, here's the quote from the Ramah. I quoted the Ramah in item Zion. Mi shehuchzik l'Rav be'ir. Somebody who is the established authority, he's the rabbinic authority in the city, he's the rav in a city, afilu hichzik ba'atzma ve'ez srara, or if somebody accepts upon himself any srara, any position of leadership or authority in the city, ein lahoyrid migdulasa, we cannot take him down from his position, afal pi shebala sham acher gadol mimenu, even if somebody more qualified moves to the city. So imagine if you have a city, there's a rav in the city, somebody who's more qualified moves into the city, we cannot take the rabbanus away from the rav and give it to someone else. It belongs to the rav. That's even regarding the position itself. And then the Ramah goes on to say, afilu benoi, even his son, uben benoi, or his grandson, la'oilam koidim la'acherim, his descendants, they have a kedima, they have the first rights over anybody else, as long as they can fill their father's shoes, as long as they're qualified for the position, in fear of heaven. And that's, again, based on the Gemara in Ksubis, based on the Rambam. They have to be chachamim tzas. They don't have to be the smartest one around. They don't have to be the most knowledgeable one around. They have to be chachamim tzas. We have to see the potential that they will be able to execute the responsibilities of the job, whatever the job entails. They have to be chachamim tzas, and then like the Rambam says, we'll work with him and we'll allow him to gain the experience and to be able to fulfill the duties of the position. The Ramah says, and I put it in brackets, but the Ramah says that there's a qualifier here. Levad im yesh minhag lekabel rabos man katzav. Unless the Rav has a contract. If the minhag is that the Rav has a contract for a number of years, in other words, it was never given to him to be a lifetime position, it was only given to him for a few years, that's an exception. So this would actually rule out a lot of the positions in today's day and age where they're given as a contract. It would not, it doesn't belong to the Rav. This is talking about a case where the Rav was machzik himself, he established himself, and he would have the position, he would have the ownership of the position. And another caveat, another nuance, the Rama says, if the minhag is that the kehila has the right to choose one over the other, so the same thing would apply, that the kehila, whatever the prevailing minhag is. So all of this is subject to minhag. In other words, the baseline comes from the Torah. The Torah tells us that the king, his son, inherits the malucha, and it's a schus that he inherits. However, all of this is subject to the terms of the hiring. If it's a contract, if it was only for a number of years, if the minhag is that the kehila reserves the right to choose the next rav, it's subject to minhag. However, in the absence of any minhag, and if the rav had a lifetime contract, that sometimes happens, the rav has a lifetime contract, then his son would be the first one who has the kedima. And this is all brought by the Rama from the Rivash, who writes this lehedya, that the Rabbanus is something that's given over by Yerusha. The Rabbanus is subject to Yerusha. Now, this would seem to be obvious, and this was the Going Psak, the Rivash, the Going Psak based on the Rambam, based on the Gemaras, and we even see something similar in the Gemara in Ksubis, that the Nesius was given over by Yerusha. Now, it's interesting, we'll soon see in the Poskim, we're not going to discuss the details so much, but the Poskim discuss whether this applies to any relative, like the Rambam says, Kol HaKoidim Ben Nachala, it goes in the Seder Nachalas. There is a discussion in the Poskim if this applies to a son-in-law, because it's as if the son-in-law is like a ben. That's a discussion in the Poskim. There are some Poskim who say that the son-in-law is like a ben. If there's no biological son who is mamala makaymoi, what about a grandson? What about a grandson through a daughter? Would he inherit? What about a brother? What about an uncle? So these things are all discussed in the Poskim. It's debated in the Poskim. The Rambam says that anybody who would inherit would have the schus to inherit in the order of the nachala. It's debated in the Poskim. So that's an excellent point. That's debated in the Poskim. Now, this would have been obvious, and this seemingly would have been the going uncontested halacha. The problem is, and this is not a problem, but all of a sudden the Magen Avram in Orech Chaim Nun Gimel Sif Katan Lamed Gimel, and this is the Magen Avram in Hilchos Chazanis, it's talking about that a chazan is an appointment. It's not like we have today that we're looking and scrounging to try to get somebody to daven for the Amid. The communities used to have it was a position of chashivas that there would be a shliat tzibur, a chazan, a shliat tzibur who was the permanent. He was installed as the permanent shliat tzibur of the community. Some old-time shuls still have that. They have a cantor, they have a chazan. I remember when I was living in Ottawa, so the two main shuls in the city, they had a paid chazan who had a lifetime contract. Like the old-time shuls, the chazan, he would daven like a cantor. They had a paid shliat tzibur who that was his position of authority. So says the Ramah says there that the shliach tzibur has the right to, he has the right to take his son to help him. So the Magen Avraham comments on that. This is in Orech Chaim, Simen Nun Gimel, Sifkat and Lamed Gimel, says the Magen Avraham. A shliach tzibur who's aging, he's coming on in years, and he can no longer conduct the services completely on his own. So says the Magen Avraham, he brings from the Tshuvas HaRashba, now, we're not even discussing when the Shliat Tzibur passed away. We're discussing that the Shliat Tzibur, the person who holds this position, he's aging, he can no longer do Shachris and Musaf and Mincha. Imagine on the Yom Leroyim, you know, the Chazan, he's expected to do all the services of the day. So it's hard, he's getting old. So he has a schus to appoint his son to help him along in to carry out his duties. And this is the Magen Avraham now quoting from the Tshuva of Rashba. Umayri shekibluhu l'shliat zibur ko yimechayev. We're discussing a shliat zibur who has a lifetime contract. Im kein, so explains the Magen Avraham, this is from the Tshuva of Rashba, bevadai al das kein hisne. Since they gave the chazin a lifetime contract, so it's self-understood that im pa'amim layucha l'spal, that if the chazin, for whatever reason, can't daven, he can't be expected to daven every single tefillah, every single day. Sheyimna acher l'saya, that the chazin would have the right to appoint someone to assist him in the daven. So if that's the case, b'noi koydim, if that's the case, that it's obvious that the shliach tzibor has the right to appoint someone to help, so his son has the first schus, because his son could inherit. The oid, says the Rashba, afilu loyhoya avroy lakach. Even if the father would not be roy, even if the father can no longer daven. In other words, we're discussing a case where the chazin is still serving as the chazin. He just needs help from his son from time to time. But even if the father is ready to retire and give up the position entirely, shuras hadin shebenoi koidim, the letter of the law would be that the son has a kedima over anybody else. Now, I highlighted this because this is all a quote from the Tshuvas HaRashba, but there's some ambiguity and there's some discrepancies in the way he says it. This is also the subject of a big debate in the Achrayim. Look what the Rashba says. Shemin hag hamokum hayesham, because that was the custom of the land. Shehabonim mismanim tachas ha'aves, that the children should have the first schus and be appointed to fill the place of their fathers. So the Rashba, he attributes it to a minhag. And now look what the Rashba says. Klal gadol amru b'kol minuyim. There's a general rule regarding all appointments in a community. Shehaben koidim afil b'kohen gadol, that the son takes precedence. Even the kohen gadol, the son takes precedence. Afilu yesh acherim gadol mimenu, even if there's someone who's greater than him, nevertheless, the halacha was that the son would take precedence. So the Rashba is actually a difficult Rashba, because the Rashba starts off saying that the minhag of the makom was that the chazan had the right, and it was self-understood that the chazan has the right to appoint his son in his place, and that was the minhag of the makom. And then the Rashba goes on to cite the Gemaras we quoted earlier, that the Kohen Gadol, the son yarshins the position of his father, and it's a klal gadol b'kol minuyim. This was not a minhag, this was based on the Sifri. So it's a difficult Rashba. We'll come back to that. This is a Tshuvas HaRashba, Simin Shin. Now, the Rashdam, the Magen Avraham brings from the Rashdam, this is Rabbi Shmuel D. Medina, who was from the Gedolei Chachmei Sfarad, passed away about 400 years ago, in Yoredeya Simin Pehei, Kosav. This is a quote now from the Magen Avraham. After he brings the Tshuvas HaRashba, he now brings the Rashdam, the Bechacham HaMemuna Lahar Betz Torah, a Chacham who's appointed to spread Torah. He's appointed to answer shaylas, and he's appointed to teach Torah, oy ledin, or he's appointed to be a judge. Loy amrinan kach. So the Rashdam says a disclaimer that this whole halacha, that the position is inherited down to the children, does not apply to a rav, to somebody whose position is to answer questions, or it does not apply to someone who is there to be marbitz Torah, or to a dayan. It doesn't apply if his position is for din. And the Rashdam, if you look up the Tshuva there, I looked it up, so the Rashdam says, he brings the Gemara in Yuma, that there's three kesarim, there are three crowns. There's the Keser Malchus, which we know is inherited. There's the Keser Kahuna, which we know is inherited. A person is born a Kayin, whether he's worthy or not, he's a Kayin by birth. And then there's the Keser Torah. The Keser Torah is not inherited. The Keser Torah is Munach Bekeren Zavis. The Keser Torah is sitting there waiting for anybody to learn and to accomplish and to grow in learning and be worthy to become a Talmud Chacham in his own right. The Keser Torah is not given Birusha. So this is like a complete disclaimer that the Rashdam comes and says that this whole halacha does not apply to a chacham who's memuna leharbitz Torah, or for din, a dayan. We do not say this. And then we bring from the Sefer Asara Maimoris, this was Rav Menachem Azaria from Pano, so he was a tremendous poisik. Also, Maimor Chikar Din, that kol minuyim shehem keser Torah ein b'neihem koidman. Now, the Asara Maimoris, Rav Menachem Azaria Mipano, he himself, he says, "Rak mihil hanasi ve'elach nohagu shebneihem koydmin." So it's very interesting that the Asara Memoris, this is Rabbi Nachum Azariah, so he says that the fact that the Nasi inherited was a minhag. It was only a minhag. Now, I made a footnote here that he's coming to answer the Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis, we see clearly, the Gemara in Ksubis says that Rebbe instructed us that Rabbi Gamliel should inherit the Nasius, even if Rabbi Gamliel was not as qualified as his brother Shimon. Nevertheless, Rabbi Gamliel inherited the Nasius. So what's the pshat? The Nasius was primarily a position to be Marbitz Torah, to teach. So says the Asara Maimaris, that Gemara was just a minhag. That Gemara was just a minhag. And the Mepharshim explained the minhag was to treat it as a melucha, to treat it as a melucha, because the descendants of the Nasius were from the Malchus Beis David, they were from the Davidic dynasty, so therefore it was sort of like preserving the melucha. So the minhag was to treat this position of Rabbanus as a melucha. That was the minhag, and that's why the Gemara in Ksubis brings the pasuk of Malchus, because there was a minhag from the time of Hillel and on to treat it as a Malchus that's inherited. But if it would just be a regular Rabbanus where there's no Minhag, therefore the halacha would be that there's no Yerusha from a Rabbanus. That was the Shita of the Magen Avram bringing from the Rashdam and bringing from the Asara Memoris. The Mishnah Berura in Sif Katan Pei Gimel, on the spot there, in Simen Lamed Gimel, actually in Simen Nun Gimel, actually brings this Machlekes and leaves it undecided. So the Mishnah Berura I quoted in Tess, he brings the Achroinim Chokim Adin Ravu Marbetz Torah Be'ir. The Achroinim argue. The Ramah, bringing from the Rivash, says that there is Yerusha by Rabbanis. However, the Magen Avram, bringing the Rashdam and bringing the Asara Memoris, says that the Yerusha is not given. But when it comes to Mar Habatzis Torah and a Rav and a Marbetz Torah or a Dayan in the ear. Im Nitin Lebnoi B'Torah Yerusha, if there's somebody who's greater, the Lohichriya, the Mishnah Berura does not give a final ruling. So this becomes now a machlokes if the halacha of Yerusha would apply to Rabbanus. So on the one hand, the Rivash, cited by the Ramah, says that if the son is a worthy candidate, he has Yiras Shamayim, and he's a Chacham Ktsas, we can sense, we see the potential that he can learn the position, he can learn the ropes, and he can learn on the job and eventually fulfill the duties of the position. So he inherits. However, the Magen Avram, in Simen Nun Gimel, in Orachayim, not even there on the spot on the Raman Yeredeya, the Magen Avram cites the Rashdam and Asara Memoris that Rabbanus does not go be Yerusha. On the contrary, we have to give it to the most worthy candidate. Now, there's a famous tshuva from the Chasam Sofer in Orachayim, tshuva Yud Beis, who actually takes the position of the Rashdam. And he broadens the position, and this is going to bring up a few of the points that we mentioned before. Any minuy of kedusha. So the Chasam Sofer actually, in order to uphold the ruling of the Rashdam, so he actually broadens the definition. It's not just Keser Torah, the way the Asara Memoris says, but any position that's rooted in kedusha. It's sort of like a religious responsibility, a rabbanis, or something that's religious in nature. If we're talking about a srara, if we're talking about a responsibility or a position of authority, that goes Birusha. But any position which is rooted in Kedusha is not Birusha. Now, the Chasam Sofer has a long tshuva there. I basically distilled it down into three proofs. He elaborates on each of the proofs, but the Chasam Sofer has three main proofs that Harbatzas Torah, Rabbanus, or any position that's rooted in Kedusha does not go Birusha. So the proof is, proof number one, and we touched on this before, that we already have a pasuk that the king, that the son inherits the throne from his father. And we also have the Sifri, the care of Yisrael, that it applies to any appointment. So asks the Chasam Sofer, why do we need another pasuk for a Kohen Gadol that his son inherits his position if we can learn it from the king? We learn other appointments, other positions from the king. And here's the question that we alluded to before. A Meshuach Melchama,
the one who serves in the army, the Kohen Gadol who serves in the army, he's excluded from the Parsha of Yerusha. So why is it that the Kohuna Gedoyla seems to be like an anomaly? It seems to be that there's an extra pasuk covering a Kohen Gadol, but not every Kohen Gadol is covered. Why not? Why is it worse than any other position that's inherited by the son? That was proof number one. So says the Chasam Sofer, you see from here that only positions of authority, like the monarchy, a srara, is inherited down, is bequeathed down. But a position that's rooted in kedusha, where you're serving more mitzad a chazin in a beis haknesses, or you're serving as a kohen gadol in the beis hamikdash, it's not a position of authority. It's more of representing the kal in yonei kedusha. If that's the case, that is not inherited down to the children. The second raya that Chasam Sofer has, we alluded to before, when the Rashba was discussing the chazin, that the chazin had a lifetime contract, and the chazin has the right to bring his son under his fold and be able to lean on his son a little bit. So says the Rashba, that's because it was a minhag, mitzad minhag, says the Rashba. So the Chasam Sofer picks up on that the minhag was to treat the Shliach Tzibur as if he's a king, but it wasn't natural. It's not the actual pasuk. It was only based on the minhag amakam. And then the third raya that Chasam Sofer brings is the famous point that the Medrash, that Moshe Rabbeinu himself asked that his sons should follow him, that his sons should succeed him, and his wish was not granted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that Yoshua, your Talmud, he will take over, but your sons will not. And as a matter of fact, we don't hear much about Moshe Rabbeinu's sons altogether. So these are the three rayas of the Chasam Sofer to uphold the ruling of the Rashtab. Number one, proof number one, that a Kohen Gadol needs a special pasuk, and not every Kohen Gadol does the son inherit. That shows that that's the exception, that sroris of Kedusha, positions of Kedusha, are not subject to inheritance. Proof number two, even the chazin, when the Ketubas HaRashba says that the minhag was that the chazin had the right to give it to his son, it was only based on a minhag, but it didn't seem to be rooted in the actual halacha. That's why the Rashba says, the Chasam Sofer goes back and forth. He starts off saying that it was a minhag, and then he goes on to say that all appointments are like that. So the minhag was to treat it like an ordinary appointment. But if there's no minhag and lack of a minhag, or rabbanus, where there's no minhag, the son would not have a kedima. And the third proof was a proof from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, in Tshuva Yud Gimel, the very next Tshuva, the Chasam Sofer, he backs down from what he says in Tshuva Yud Beis. Not fundamentally. Fundamentally, he still agrees with what he wrote in the first Tshuva, that the Yerusha, Rabbanus, is not subject to Yerusha. But in Tshuva Yud Gimel, he says, it's very interesting, and he says that he's so happy he thought of this to be Malamit Zchus to the Bnei Torah. It's fascinating how it's as if he wants to find a way that the son should be able to inherit his father's position for the Rabbanus. Technically, from the letter of the law, from the perspective of Halacha, the son should not inherit the position of his father for Rabbanus. He should not automatically be entitled to the position if he's not the best candidate. But says the Chasam Sofer, the nature of Rabbanus changed today. Nowadays, says the Chasam Sofer, and he's talking about his time, the Rav, his position does not only involve answering Shilas and litigating cases, halacha, being a dayan. The position expanded, the Rav carries a lot of responsibility. He has to fundraise perhaps for this. I'm not trying to dump jobs onto the Rabbanim. But says the Chasam Sofer, nowadays the Rav has responsibilities in the city. If you read the stories, the Briska Rav, for example, in Brisk, was responsible to establish a yeshiva. He established mikvois. The Rav has much more responsibility nowadays than merely answering questions. It's not the main role, perhaps even the main role, is not to be Marbitz Torah in the community. The Rav's position is a position of responsibility where he's serving the community. So says the Chasam Sofer that the Rabbana seems to have changed into a position of responsibility, not as much a position where the sole responsibility is to answer shilas and to be marbitz Torah. It's fascinating that the Chasam Sofer had this observation, that the Rabbana seemed to have been evolving into a position of responsibility versus simply a dayanus. That's what the Chasam Sofer says. And being the case, it would be almost like the Nasius, that the Nesias was originally a position of Rabbanus, but the Minhag became to treat it like a Malchus. And that's what the Asara Memara says, that the Minhag from Hillel and on was to inherit the Nesias because the position evolved into a position sort of like a Malchus. So it became more of a monetary, of a fiscal responsibility or a leadership responsibility in the city, not just a discussion of answering Shilas and being Mavitz Torah. Now, the Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, the Maram Sheik, so he comes and he argues on his Rebbe. He says, Lule, he writes his Ksuba there in the utmost respect for his Rebbe, but he says, Lule, if not for the Psak of his Rebbe, he would have read the sources differently. He says like this, this that a Meshuach Muhammad, going through the three rayas, the Chassam Sofer had three proofs. Why is it that the Meshuach Muhammad, the Kohen Gadol who served in the army, why does he not have the schus to inherit his father? So says the Maram Shik, because that's not a position bekerev Yisrael. It's almost like a position that's hardly ever relevant. It's only a position when there's an army. So they're only appointing him, so to speak, almost like temporarily. It's an akroi ba'alma. They're only appointing him temporarily. It's not a position bekerev Yisrael. That's why it's not considered like the position belongs to the Meshuach Muhammad. That's why it's an exception. It's not because it's a position of Kedusha. It's an isolated, it's an exception that the Kohen Meshuach Muhammad is not really the bailus of the Meshuach Muhammad because he's called to duty, he's drafted to duty whenever there's an army, whenever there's a battle. But it's not a position that's day-to-day. It's not Bekar of Yisrael. The second proof of the Chassam Sofer, why did the Rashba have to say that the Chazan is only entitled to include, to bring his son in because of the Minhag? So says the Maram Shik, the reason why the Rashba has to invoke the Minhag is because we saw in the Ramah that even if you hold that it is subject to Yerusha, a Minhag could preclude that. If the Minhag is that the Tzibur has the right to pick someone else, then he only took the position on those terms, and the Minhag would say that the Tzibur reserved the rights to pick another Rav or another leader at a later date. So when the Rashba says that the Minhag is that it would give it to the son, he doesn't mean that it's not Birusha, he means that there was no Minhag Fakert, there was no Minhag to the contrary. It is subject to Minhag, but the letter of the law is that if there's no Minhag, the son would get the position. And finally, the third raya of the Chassam Sofer, Moshe Rabbeinu. So on that, there are actually conflicting midrashim. The Maram Shik brings midrashim that the sons were not Isaac and Torah at all. In other words, the sons did not even have the minimum requirement. They were not eligible for the position at all. They weren't even Chachamim Ktsas, like the Ramah says. Others say that Yeshua was Zoicha because he served in a leadership capacity even during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the there's a debate. We have the Rivash and the Ramah, who clearly say that Rabbanus is subject to Yerusha. We have the Magen Avram and the Marshdam and the Asar Maimaris, who says that Rabbanus is not subject to Yerusha. And the Chassam Sofer extends this to any position of Kedusha. And he has proofs. The Maram Shik rejects those proofs and says that there is Yerusha. The Chassam Sofer, at the end of the day, agrees that if the Rabbanus includes other responsibilities besides paskening and being a dayan, then that position would be subject to Yerusha. So it's a debate back and forth. Now the Kshuvis and Hanhagis from Rav Moshe Sternbach, he says something very interesting. We alluded to this before. Nowadays, that there is a board or there is a committee that hires the Rav. So he feels that nowadays, the Rabbanan, and this is actually a taina in a way, it's a little bit of a breakdown in the system, that the Rav is more like a hired hand. This is similar to what the Ramah said earlier, that it's based on a contract for a number of years. It's really an employee, and it's not a position of authority. So he feels that there wouldn't be Yerusha the way the Rabbanus is set up today. It's interesting, when I was living in Miami, so the Rav there, who was the Rav for decades, so he passed away. It was a chashev Rav, a Talmud of Baron Cutler Zatzal, Rabbi Shapiro. When he passed away, so the shul, his son went for the job, but his son ended up They took a different Rav, and the son ended up becoming a big Rav. Rav Ephraim Shapiro, he's a big Rav today, and he's a very popular speaker today. He became a Rav in a different shul in, I believe, in North Miami Beach. So it's very interesting that this plays out today in the Rabbanus. And he was a Rav there for decades. So I would say to summarize all of this, what we've seen so far, the Shaila of Yerusha Rabbanus, and this is my Sikkum in item Yud Dalet. First of all, the question only starts if the Rav has a lifetime contract. Probably what happens is the Rav starts off with a contract, and then eventually the Rav just sort of like just serves as the Rav, even if it's not a formal lifetime contract. If it's muhsik, if the Rav becomes established in the position, that's when the question begins. If a Rav is still in the beginning, only has a contract for a number of years, the question wouldn't even start. But once the Rav becomes muhsik, once it becomes established that he's the Rav, and for all intents and purposes, nobody would dream of not renewing the contract, the Rav became muhsik, that's when the question starts. Like the Magen Avraham writes regarding the Chazan. In a case when the son is not qualified at all, the question doesn't start. Because the Ramah says he has to be a Chacham Tzas, and the Marim Shik says that Moshe Rabbeinu's sons did not inherit his position because they weren't fit for the position. So we have to be talking about a case where the son is a Yorei Chet, and the son is qualified. He's a Chacham Tzas, and we see potential that he would be able to fulfill the duties of the Rabbanus. That's when the question starts. So it would seem, technically, that there's a machlokes if the son has Yerusha between the Chasam Sofer and the Maram Shik, between the Rivash and the Marjdam. I saw in a tshuva from Rav Asher Weiss Shlita that there's also a dispute in the Paiskim, now that it's a Suffolk, who's considered the Muchsik? Who's the burden of proof on? Who's considered the Muchsik? Who's considered the Moitzi? So Rav Asher Weiss Shlita holds that the community is considered the muhsik. The schus is in the community because the issue is very vague and not decided at all. So therefore, the community is the muhsik. So I would say, basically, as a sikkum, if the son is roy, and if basically the differential between the son as a candidate and someone else as a candidate is more or less equal, the son should have kadima. If the other candidate is far a superior candidate to the son, then, as the Poskim say, the community would have the right to take the other candidate. But if the son shows potential and the son is able to become the Rav, then there should be consideration given to the son if the community feels that the son would be roy for the position, would be able to eventually fulfill the position. Okay, Yasha Koyach.
This conference will now be recorded.